people of the internet. How's it going today? How you doing? I'm Billy Bones, and this is A Walk Through the Mind, a moment where we can sit back, chit-chat, hang out, have a discussion, discuss a handful of ideas that have been bouncing around inside my head, and see if we can't take some of those ideas and start up a conversation, get the conversation going with friends, family, maybe just that person we run into on the street, or maybe we find a rabbit hole we can go down ourselves and see where it takes us. And there's a quote that I've heard or a saying many, many times over the past year now from a local radio host that seems to fit in very well with what's going on here in at least downtown Seattle. Not down there, but when you are kind, when you should be firm, you will be firm when you should have been kind. And I feel that, again, fits in well with what's been going on lately. We've had the protests and the riots of the death of George Floyd, the police brutality, the use of excessive force. And it's not limited to just George Floyd. It's not limited just to black people, although that is the current message that's going around. We can dig into numbers about how many white people are killed versus how many black people are killed, and we can even go so far as into the proportional percentages of each in an attempt to hyper-focus on certain things. But as I discussed last week, it doesn't always necessarily have to denote down to police brutality. We can look at the forced life choices or the life choices that lead to the chance of some sort of income that lead individuals down certain paths and make them to make certain decisions that puts them into a certain category of individual that needs a certain way of being handled, dealt with, either on a person-to-person basis or on a disciplinary basis. We can have our disagreements on how discipline is to work, but we can also agree that there are certain ways that you interact with certain individuals, where they dress, how they dress, where they come from, their profession, all leads into a means of communication of how one is to communicate to another, and maybe where barriers are put up, either through ignorance and a lack of education or just a difference in education, different viewpoints. But this talk of police brutality and the use of excessive force has been quite the topic lately. And by lately, I mean since the shutdown began. There was a Seattle police officer that got in trouble for posting a video just in regards to the coronavirus.
I've been in law enforcement for 10 years, and I'm speaking to my peers, other fellow officers, people in any kind of law enforcement position. I've seen officers nationwide enforcing tyrannical orders against the people. And I'm hoping it's a minority of officers, but I'm not sure anymore, because every time I turn on the television, every time I look to the internet, I'm seeing people arrested or cited for going to church, for traveling on the roadways, for going surfing, opening their businesses, going to the park with their families, or doing nails out of their own house. But we're seeing this more and more and more, and we need to start looking at ourselves as officers and thinking, is what I'm doing right? Now, I want to remind you that regardless of where you stand on the coronavirus, we don't have the authority to do those things to people just because a mayor or a governor tells you otherwise. I don't care if it's your sergeant or your chief of police. We don't get to violate people's constitutional rights because somebody in our chain of command tells us otherwise. It's not how this country works.
So as he said, been seeing all this on social media of these tyrannical orders getting enforced. All of this just kind of stirring the pot. I know I saw it. I know I saw quite a bit of it. More of it outside of the United States, but not limited to outside of the United States, of this destruction of the trust within us, This officer continues on with this to talk about the destruction of the public trust because of this.
What really has been pissing me off lately is the fact that these officers that are going out here and enforcing these tyrannical orders, what they're doing is they're making my job and my safety, or they're putting my job and my safety at risk. Because what you're doing is you're widening the gap between public trust and law enforcement officers. And what that's going to do is it's going to, I mean, look at what's happened to law enforcement in the last 10 years. Less and less public trust, and more often than not, that is a result of isolated incidents that get blown out of proportion. Well, they're not isolated anymore. They're happening every single day.
Again, more and more getting pushed further in into the minds of everybody, putting this fear of God into them that these people that we have elected to maintain the status quo, balance the laws that we have put on the books to make sure that things are going to happen. And with the abuse of power, the abuse of, yeah, well, my boss just told me to do so, is going to lead to something even worse.
I'm afraid that these actions are going to wake a sleeping giant, i.e. the American people, okay? They are going to be put in a position where they won't have their rights trampled anymore. And us as law enforcement officers, we'll have our ability to enforce the law stripped from us in about 10 minutes. I think what is going to happen if this continues is we're going to see bloodshed in the streets, okay? I don't want to see bloodshed in the streets on either side of this coin. I don't want to see fellow officers get injured or killed, and I certainly don't want to see citizens get injured or killed.
Almost foreboding. Now, granted, he didn't see the police killing, the excessive use of force with George Floyd coming in, but the groundwork, the kindling had been laid, gas had been poured, and George Floyd was the match. Lit everything ablaze, got everybody up and active. People were protesting, then people decided to take it a step further, those who had been wronged, either justly or unjustly so, by the police, and made it personal. Now, we could have been having these talks for years. We have. This is not the first time this discussion has popped up and involved itself. It's definitely the loudest it's been in a very long time. And maybe that's because the people we elected didn't listen, or didn't listen well enough, or listened and didn't implement properly. I don't feel that it's necessarily fully systematic. Again, I know that many police precincts out here make a valiant effort. We've seen several police officers actually take the knee and stand in solidarity with the protesters, and the fact that there is absolute disgust in what this one individual did to the name of police officers. But again, it's a little bit more than just one event that has kicked it off into this point. And through this lack of messaging on both sides, the push from the public to reinforce things, the people they elected have come on TV and radio and said, we're fixing it, we're doing our best. And yet at a certain point, the best hasn't happened. And then we, again, get to these protests and riots. Potential modification of messaging and videos on either side. What happened 10 minutes, 30 seconds before the video started, or 30 seconds or 10 minutes after the video ended? Who initiated? Was it a full line of individuals and on the far end, someone started a problem, which started the chain reaction that went all the way down, and at the other end of the line there, where they're recording, they only see the reactionary actions that have exploded, missing out on the full messaging. But here in Seattle, with those protests turned riots, the destruction of private and public property, in an attempt to get this messaging across, the city of Seattle pulled all of the files and evidence and whatnot, weapons, out of the 5th precinct on Capitol Hill.
The demonstrators made it clear the conflict was the fencing preventing them from marching. So we moved it. I want to allow peaceful demonstrations and resolve every situation. with full awareness that sometimes there are clear threats to the facilities. You know, a precinct burned in Minneapolis, a headquarters was ransacked in Portland, arson and looting in downtown Seattle, bulletins from the FBI, and chants at the East Precinct of burn it down.
Now, the city of Seattle got a lot of flack for just seceding this building. But again, when you look at the chance to de-escalate the situation, you have police that are using riot shields and riot gear, smoke grenades to try and dissipate the crowd, which only in turn angers them. And then you get these threats of burning down the building, which is connected to stores and apartments, which means it will not be limited to just that building. It will be connected to multiple buildings. And then how difficult does it become to get the police or the fire department in there to help quell the situation with already tense individuals? Again, it's a fine line. It's not one way or the other. And in a roundabout way, it did de-escalate the situation. It turned into these individuals, these protesters, securing a 6-block radius, putting up barricades, making sure that the police don't come in here, making sure the protest is peaceful, making sure that they are heard, their demands are brought up, so that way they can get the conversation started. They want to be able to fix everything. Now, they've got a full list of demands, quite the list, actually, asking for things like rent control, more funding for the arts, free college, no more homeless camp sweeps. They want mental health experts to answer and respond to all and de-escalate 911 calls, de-escalate all interactions that would normally have gone to the police. Maybe that's probably a good idea if we have an influx of people with mental disorders that just out there don't know that they're about to hurt someone. It's probably a good idea. But how do you resume this conflict resolution? I don't know. That's not answered within the demands, but that's something, I guess, to be figured out within the conversations that are going to be happening. They also want better focus on Black and Native American histories in the schools. They want more anti-bias training. Apparently, we don't have enough of that in Seattle when we are pretty well versed in making sure that we have quite the selection of people available. We're very inclusive out here. And they want all the Confederacy statues pulled down. No mention of the statue of Lenin of Soviet Russia being pulled down, but that's, I guess, neither here nor there. But their biggest demand is to defund the police. And the compromise I've heard on the radio throughout this week has been at least a 50% cut. Now, I've heard from officials that they don't support a 50% cut and they don't support defunding the police because that in turn leads to less police, which turns into an increased response time of any 911 call. Seattle is already having an issue with that due to the lack of policing, due to the lack of support, both from the public and from the city council in being able to do their job. They want to reappropriate those funds that went to the police. They want to enforce the free public housing with that money. They want free college with that money, the more public education. They want naturalization services included as well. And one of their other demands is with this defunding of the police is to create community self-policing. And that's where things kind of get kind of sketchy on what I believe and feel. Since the precinct was abandoned, this self-policing, this community self-policing has started taking effect. Right off the bat, right after the barricades went up, the John Brown Gun Club went up. And that is an anti-fascist group of individuals that practice their Second Amendment right to, you know, form their militia. Good on them for abiding by their constitutional rights. But when I hear about them patrolling this policeless area, kind of think about the Rolling Stones free concert, where they hired the Hell's Angels to do the policing, to secure the area. You do a little bit of looking into that, and that went sideways quick. Now, granted, that's the Hell's Angels and not this anti-fascist gun club, even though one of their members did throw a Molotov cocktail at an ICE facility, attempting to blow up their natural gas tank, propane tank, one of those things. But then this self-policing aspect, how do you hold people accountable? We've got an incident that has happened here that starts off with an individual spray painting a building that turns into an altercation.
You don't know the owner of this place? The owner that's actually being nice and letting us stay here?
Oh God.
Forgot we are the police of this community now. We are the leaders of this community now.
Someone's place, someone's property.
No one lives here.
Okay. Right. But people do work here and live here.
Someone does work here and live here.
And you're being disrespectful. That's what the point is.
Someone does work here and live here. The precinct ain't destroyed, bro. And we stopped them from doing that.
So now I feel that's most of the people. Polite. Hey, you know, we're trying to work with this together, but you're out here ruining our cause. You even heard that guy say we stopped the rioters from destroying the precinct. That's not what they want. But that person wouldn't stop spray painting and tagging the building. And this individual, Raz Simone, ended up punching and getting in a tussle with this graffiti artist. Now, how do we hold either of these two parties at fault for the actions that they've partaken in? We got one person that's defacing personal property. Individuals work hard for that. Or even if it's public property, the group of people supported and paid for that. They don't want it defaced. But yet we have this individual calling themselves the police of the area now, getting in a tussle with the spray painter. Isn't that the point of the protests? Was police brutality? Now, he didn't pull out a gun. He didn't lay on his neck. But at what point does the person who's spray painting, being under attack, being quelled for their civil disobedience, take it to the next step? At what point are they on drugs or just out to have a bad day and they pull a knife or a gun in an attempt to defend themselves? At what point does this turn into the Lord of the Flies and we call for public hangings in an attempt to settle all grievances? Who's the one that gets hanged? Who's the one that gets put in the... Who gets put in timeout? Now, in addition to the self-policing, making sure that people stay above board, there's also allegations of racketeering and extortion.
We have been hearing from community members that they have been subjected to barricades set up by the protesters, with some armed individuals running them as checkpoints into the neighborhood. While they have a constitutionally protected right to bear arms, and while Washington is an open carry state, there is no legal right for those arms to be used to intimidate community members. If someone feels threatened or intimidated, we ask that they call 911 and report the incident. No one at these checkpoints has the legal authority to demand identification from anyone. Again, we ask if anyone is subjected to these demands that they call 911 and report the incident. We have heard anecdotally reports of citizens and businesses being asked to pay a fee to operate within this area. This is the crime of extortion. If anyone has been subjected to this, we need them to call 911 and report the incident.
That was Assistant Chief of Police Deanna Nolet. Now, again, those are allegations, only things said on social media. But how do those get rectified, especially if the police are not allowed in this area, this zone, this self-policed, self-enforced area? What's the point of calling 911 if you can't log anything? But most of the people in here are the polite, hippie-like folk. Here with the good feelings, the good vibes. There's nothing wrong with that. Best beliefs. I mean, they even took over a public park and turned it into a garden, which eventually someone put up and said that only blacks and natives are allowed to harvest from the garden. But, I mean, other than that, it's all good feelings, good vibes, best intentions. Get it all fixed. turned into a movie night and just a basic rave and people doing drugs and having a good time out there protesting. There's even a story of a business owner down there that says this is actually one of the most peaceful times he's ever seen. He runs a bar, and any Friday or Saturday night pre-lockdown, see regular fights. I guess that's what happens when bars, but again, no one out there is drinking heavily now. No one's out there escaping from work or escaping from lockdown right now. But how does Seattle, Washington, or even so far as the federal United States take this set of city blocks back? I mean, those barricades, they went up Monday afternoon, and by Wednesday afternoon, we were finally able to get the governor, Jay Inslee, on TV and able to ask him some questions. Now, granted, this was about the coronavirus and COVID update, but I mean, you're the governor. You're supposed to know these things. You're supposed to go on air and be able to answer any and all questions that are currently going on.
Governor, I'd like to ask you about what's going on in Seattle. There's this thing called the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone. What's your thought on that? The fact that the protesters have taken that over and not allowing people to come and go freely? Regarding the National Guard.
Well, that's news to me, so I'll have to reserve any comment about it. I have not heard anything about that from any credible source. Not that you're not credible. It's just like, before I espouse an opinion, I should know of which I speak.
48 hours after the barricades went up, and he has no idea what's going on there. This is a governor, a sitting individual, sitting representative in charge of the United States, or of a state within the United States. And when I heard that, I remembered of this clip of Mr. Gary Johnson when he was running for president.
What would you do if you were elected about Aleppo?
About?
Aleppo.
And what is Aleppo?
You're kidding.
No.
Aleppo is in Syria. It's the epicenter of the refugee crisis.
Okay, got it.
Okay.
Gary Johnson was only running for president. He wasn't in charge yet. And we have Governor Jay Inslee, more focused on climate change issues within the COVID shutdown than any point of insurrection within the biggest city in his state, the one that's been on the news for rioting and protests for the past week. So I don't see much help coming from him. I feel that the mayor of Seattle is held to an ideological standard and not to the whims of the people. You have, again, the Seattle City Council. I've played clips from them doing their best to destroy the support of the police department. The City Council is demanding that the mayor step down. Both the mayor and the police chief have stated that they are not stepping down. They're going to hold their ground. And there's a lot of strife within the Seattle government on how to take care of these things. And in an attempt to create the communication between the people more or less in charge at the autonomous zone, out there pushing for the talks and the negotiations, how do you balance out the message to create an even playing field? Again, these individuals in there, they have the best intentions in mind. They want the best things for everybody. Doesn't mean they necessarily, nor do I. Keep that in mind. I don't have answers on here. But there's no way you can always please everyone 100%. Not possible. And that's only because this message from this camp is not 100% unified. They all have a greater degree of agreeing upon things. But if you want to see what a unified message can accomplish, again, go watch on Netflix Wild Wild Country about Rajneesh Pahram down in Oregon, the commune that started up that became in control of the city. But again, that's the unified message idea. And because this unified message is not there within this greater collection of people within this 6-block radius, we have to ask again who all is in the crowd. It can be 99% or maybe as low as 90% that all agree in the best practice and they're willing to negotiate, make secessions and things to make it all balance, to make it all work out. It's negotiating. But what about the 1% or the 10%, however many that are in there, to ruin the message, to ignite that fire again, waiting for that next chance to strike? What about those individuals that will not budge until all of the police are defunded, taken out of service? And if we want to go so far as to talk about systemic racism, we need to look at who's implementing the policies. I mean, we can look at something more or less as simple as stop and frisk out in New York City, started under Mayor Giuliani, continued and enhanced under Mayor Bloomberg. And if you want to go down that rabbit hole, great episode that I just listened to this week. Seems to fit very well with the discussion that we should be having today, right now, about systemic racism. Mo Facts, episode 27. It's in the show notes. MOEFACTZ. Again, definitely worth looking at and opening, expanding our mind on what's out there. But again, we need to look at who all is implementing these rules, these policies. Just like the Seattle police officer was talking about, with the tyrannical orders of keeping people locked inside during COVID because it's dangerous. You're not allowed to protest your right to go out and air grievances, but yet when it comes to protesting and rioting, it's all for it. Seems a little backwards in comparison. But these people at the top, who are we employing? Are we employing them as an individual to fill a spot within the greater spectrum so we have fair and balanced imagery of the people we're portraying? Were we implementing these people due to their skill set, their track record, things that they're willing and going to enforce, things that they're planning on fixing, adjusting of the budgets and whatnot, so we can actually have enough of a police force so that way no one's overworked? Or are they going to go so far as to defund the police and get rid of them, like in Minnesota? And then we'll start to look at the broken window theory. And what if this crowd doesn't step down? What if the group says, no, this is not how we want to deal with this? And they stand their ground. They hold themselves to stand, toe the line, make sure that this doesn't change. Does this become a no-go zone like the places in Europe with the Muslim camps that they're not allowed to talk about, where there's no policing? Does this become like the homeless camps that we have here in Seattle that they want to say no more homeless sweeps? And do a little bit of searching and you can find that within these homeless camps, there are people that steal and dismantle bikes so that they can fund themselves. There's drug dealers and sex traffickers. At what point does the greater community not have the choice or the influence on how their area is to be run? And how does it spread? Ideas aren't always contained to physical borders. I think we can agree to that. At what point do we send in the police or the National Guard in order to return the rule of law to this section? Do we wait for an agreement, or do we just say no? All of you have seceded from the United States and we disagree with this statement. At what point are we kind when we should be firm? That when we have to be firm, when we should be kind, we will be firm. I butchered that already. I don't know. I hope you get the idea. Talking points. Ideas. Conversation starters. Just getting the gears turning within our head. Seeing where it takes us. And I'm Billy Bones, B-I-L-L-Y-B-O-N, the number 3-S. You find me on Twitter, at Billy Bones. You go to the website, billybones.com. You get in contact with me, questions, comments, love mail, hate mail. Get it all figured out, squared away. Let me know what I left out. Maybe I should have added some more. And this is a Value for Value podcast. If you found any value out of this, the first thing I ask is you give the show a share. And if you found monetary value out of this show, you go to the website, you scroll all the way down, click that Value for Value button, it'll take you to PayPal. Chip in a dollar or two or whatever you feel it's worth. But otherwise, I love you guys. I'll talk to you next week.